Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. 15 to 20 minutes of global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption you won't hear anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. Spilling the beans on the secrets of the rich and powerful in the offshore world, over 2.5 million files have been leaked, and the impact is huge. It's really worth checking out the responses from around the world so far to the offshore leaks on the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists website, www.icij.org. Lots of tax justice wins this month. The G20 have endorsed automatic information exchange. That means the world's most powerful economies are saying they want governments to provide tax data to each other automatically rather than on request. More on that later. In Europe, Luxembourg's agreed to give up its banking secrecy and apply automatic information exchange from 2015. The last blocking country, Austria, looks like it's crumbling too. European bodies have agreed a new regime for transparency in the extractive industries. It'll mean big oil, gas, mining firms and the logging industry will have to declare payments they make in resource-rich nations. The UK government's launched a legal challenge against the implementation of the financial transaction tax by 11 European Union states, so the City of London will be pleased. And finally, remember the French minister supposed to be cracking down on tax evasion who lied about his secret Swiss bank account? He's now been charged with laundering the proceeds of tax fraud. There are new allegations now that he tried to stash 15 million euros in Geneva, denied by his lawyer. I wonder how many other politicians around the world are feeling a bit worried. And those are the TaxCast headlines for this month. You can keep up to date on the Tax Justice Network's blog on www.taxjustice.blogspot.com. Next up, Tax Justice economist Richard Murphy. OK, Richard, this month we are really spoilt for choice on what we're going to talk about because it's been a really exceptionally busy and exciting time for tax justice campaigners. Let's start with the G20, who've said that they're now going to back automatic information exchange as a global standard. The advantage of automatic information exchange between countries rather than data on request case by case is obviously you can only ask for the data if you already know the exact information you're looking for before you ask for it. So automatic information exchange would go a long way towards ending secrecy that facilitates so much what's wrong with our global financial system. And I don't want to get too carried away about the G20 endorsing this, because I've always thought that they'll just do what they did last time, which is talk a lot about ending tax havens and then do nothing about it, really, except agree to talk about it more at some point at the next summit. So do you think we can now reasonably expect some concrete action from the G8 in June?
All these steps are, well, just that, steps on the way. We can't be sure that the G8 or the G20, and the two are working in tandem, are going to deliver full automatic information exchange yet. In fact, let's be honest about it. We are still quite some way from that. They have committed to putting their toe in the water to work out how to make this work. From being committed to information exchange on request to being committed to automatic information exchange is a massive change of philosophy, because it basically says the country which is hiding a taxpayer's money no longer has the right to do so. Now, that is important. But let's also be clear, we've been in the situation where they have, as for example happened in 2009 at the London G20 summit, where they said, this is the end of tax havens. The commitment has been made, but we have to keep up the pressure. I can foresee discussions going on for many years to try to define what is interest, what is a profit, what is a dividend, what is a capital gain, what is an earning from an employment, and so on and on and on. And the games that people can play around definitions can be protracted into the future for so long to nullify the process. What we've said is that isn't strictly necessary. What we need to start off with, at the very least, is simply an exchange of information about who has an interest in what we call a structure in another country. It's about creating pressure to be honest in the first place. So if we have an information exchange on the fact you've got an account in Jersey, Guernsey, Cayman, or wherever, That will be enough in itself to persuade most people to actually disclose it on their tax return. That's the win we're looking for. That's the goal. And we could get that one really quite quickly. So we need to look at the practical steps to achieve automatic information exchange, which are not delayed by lots of really pointless negotiation.
OK, and things are moving pretty fast in Europe. Even The Economist this month had a whole article about called Is Bank Secrecy Dying in Europe? Is it really dying in Europe? We've seen Luxembourg throwing in the towel on secrecy, and they're agreeing to comply with information sharing with the new improved version of the EU Savings Tax Directive from 2015. Austria is now the last one standing. What are the chances, do you think?
Oh, the chances on this, I think, are incredibly high. I mean, it's just worth noting this change of attitude from The Economist, which has been one of the absolute bastions of the free market, free trade, free tax haven system, coming out time and time again with articles saying tax havens are bad. We need to make sure we have tax cooperation, not tax competition, because this will create a better, fairer tax system. Now, that is in itself, it's rather like this change towards automatic information exchange. It's a sea change. It's an indication of the way the barometer has moved on this. Are we going to see a change in Europe? Look, we've now got Austria left, opposed to the European Savings Tax Directive. Behind closed doors, in the way that Europe works, I bet there is some not terribly unsubtle negotiation going on where Austria is demanding some sort of favour from the European Union now, because it wants an investment subsidy for something, who knows what, and in exchange, it will give up banking secrecy, at least with regard to foreigners, which seems to be its current position. In other words, it's going to keep banking secrecy for Austrians, but not for foreigners. Well, frankly, if Austria wants banking secrecy for Austrians, that's entirely okay by me. You can do what you like domestically. If you don't want to find out who owes tax inside your country, that's your problem, not mine. But if you're providing banking secrecy to ensure that somebody from another country doesn't pay their tax, that is my problem. I believe that Austria will be giving up banking secrecy. Frankly, I don't think this is worth enough to Austria and its banks for them to hold out for long. So I suspect it will happen. And actually, let's also be clear, the revised European Savings Tax Directive, not the one we have now, which is pretty limited in scope, but the revised one, which is sitting waiting on the table to be approved, is probably the best and most sophisticated automatic information exchange system we've got so far. For Europe, it's great news. If we can get it, it's worth buying Austria off now.
And if Austria does crumble and follow Luxembourg's position, where they've decided to comply with the information sharing through the EU Savings Tax Directive, what would happen then? What would that mean?
Oh, look, if Austria does comply and we do get the revised European Savings Tax Directive, information exchange in Europe, and remember, Europe for these purposes does include the British tax havens, Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man, Cayman Islands, British Virgin Islands, and so on. What will happen is that we will be seeing them have to exchange information, not just with regard to personal bank accounts, which is the case now, but we're going to have to see them exchange information with regard to income paid to companies, income paid to trusts, where those trusts and companies can be identified to be linked with somebody who lives in another EU country. Now, that's vital because it means suddenly that the standard mechanisms used to disguise ownership of assets to date, companies and trusts in particular, will basically be blown out of the water as secrecy mechanisms in the future. And when you blow the secrecy apart, which has been the absolutely fundamental product of tax havens, then the zero tax rates become irrelevant because it's secrecy that has let people take advantage of zero tax rates. Once they can't have the secrecy which lets them hide their money, lets them hide their tax fraud, then frankly, the game is over. We are going to see a complete change in the European tax haven market, but it also has implications even beyond that. Because actually, this will be extraterritorial, the European Union. So the European Savings Tax Directive will also, for example, in many situations, apply to trust arrangements managed from places like Singapore if they are for a European source of income. So this is radical stuff. It really does take us a long way further forward. We are winning this intellectual argument. This seems to be the theme of this month's TaxCast. You know, we've seen that with regard to automatic information exchange. We've seen it with regard to what's happening in Europe with banking secrecy. We've won the intellectual argument. Now we need to build on the basis of that the real foundations of delivering the justice that we're seeking.
Richard Murphy, tax justice economist and accountant. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. Here's a question for you. Have a guess, which country was the biggest foreign investor in Russia? Not sure? Try the tiny Mediterranean island of Cyprus. Yeah, really. And we all know how that ended. Here's another one for you. How about the largest external source of investment in China? It's the tiny British Virgin Islands. What about India? It's the tiny island of Mauritius. If you're beginning to see a pattern here, you're right. All of these huge foreign direct investor locations are tax havens. This month, the TaxCast looks at round-tripping, fake foreign direct investment.
I'm a chartered accountant from the southern city of Chennai. I'm practicing for more than 20 years on various aspects of Indian accounting. The day I passed out of my chartered accountancy final, India began her liberalization process. So what I learned had to be unlearned, and we had to relearn again right from day one. So that taught me that I had to be consistently on the learning curve.
That's because Mr. Venkatesh has first-hand experience of how companies and wealthy individuals get pretty creative when it comes to shifting their wealth around and keeping their tax bills low. He worked on a notorious case highlighting one of India's biggest tax loopholes, the Indian government versus Vodafone. To cut a long story short, Vodafone claimed some transactions it routed through the Cayman Islands and Mauritius were foreign direct investments coming into India. The Indian government and the courts decided it was an artificial ruse designed to avoid tax. Vodafone appealed to the Supreme Court and won, but the government now plans to change the constitution to get Vodafone to pay the tax, because they know why the largest source of foreign direct investment into India comes from the tiny island of Mauritius. Many rich and powerful individuals and companies continue to take full advantage of it, to India's cost.
The problem for India is that which escaped the books. How do you capture that? You know, roughly $1 to $1.4 trillion of our wealth could be parked abroad. That's the type of money that we are looking at. They may take it in Cayman Islands, they may take it in Bahamas, and through the Mauritius route. The Mauritius route is because India and Mauritius have got a double taxation avoidance agreement, wherein any investment routed from Mauritius is not taxed in India, but taxed in Mauritius, and the rate of tax in Mauritius is zero. These type of dodgy tax structures that neither gets taxed in the destination nor in the host is something that we can do away with. You have no authority to talk morality. You cannot be moral and route your funds from Cayman Islands, period.
After Vodafone won its appeal, many businesses raved about how the ruling would boost foreign direct investment into India. Many multinational corporations like Kraft Foods and Saab Miller have carried out similar acquisitions since then. Freelance financial journalist in Hong Kong, Naomi Rovnik, has written for Quartz on how tax havens are the top source of foreign direct investment in emerging economies and what that really means.
These governments are losing money to tax dodging, tax havens, and to offshore secrecy. Countries like to talk about how much foreign direct investment they attract, which means, you know, people are really like our economy, so they're bringing money into it from outside. These are foreigners. But when you drill down into the foreign direct investment figures for generally emerging markets, you find quite often that their largest foreign investors are probably people who already live in those countries and are using fake FDI, fake foreign direct investment, to evade tax.
Okay, so the money leaves the country it was made in, it's deposited offshore, and the identity of the original owners often disguised through anonymous shell companies. They bring the money back in many forms, but the important thing is it's in the name of foreign direct investment. Naomi Rovnik.
You get a lot of tax breaks in all of these countries on foreign direct investment, so it's more lucrative to pretend you're doing FDI than if you're not. Certainly countries all over the world like to encourage foreign direct investment. It's set up for a good reason, to help real bona fide foreign investors to put money into these countries. Sadly, it's abused.
And here's an example of how tax havens allow corporations and the wealthy to do that in China.
If you're a Chinese company, you're meant to pay 25% tax on your earnings. Chinese exporters, for example, quite often they will have a Hong Kong company which collects the foreign currency from their customers in the US. So your Chinese exporter officially is meant to ring up the currency authority and say, I've got $100 million of foreign currency and I'd like to bring it home and pay tax on it. Can you help me organise the currency conversion? But what a lot of Chinese exporters do instead is they underreport their earnings from their foreign customers. And the exporter might call the currency authority and say, I've made 50 million. Please, can I convert it to renminbi, which is the Chinese currency, the yuan? And he might leave the other 50 in Hong Kong to not be taxed. And then he can do a bunch of things with that. He can buy property in the Cayman Islands. He can, you know, send his kids to Harvard. Our exporter might think, well, I really want to buy some Chinese property, but I don't want to pay tax on my foreign earnings. So what I'll do is I'll send, and this is the typical route, I'll send the 50 million I haven't declared to the British Virgin Islands. You can do this in a number of ways, for example, setting up a BVI shell company that effectively charges consultancy services of 50 million to your Hong Kong company. So your Hong Kong company doesn't show any profit that you have to be taxed on here. So after he's done that, he'll send it back to China as a foreign investment. So normally, undeclared earnings from Hong Kong will go to the BVI first. They'll be put in a BVI company, which is protected, of course, by all the layers of secrecy the British Virgin Islands allows its customers. And then maybe a few months later, even a few years later, that untaxed income will be brought back into China as a foreign direct investment by the BVI shell company into whatever our exporter wants to invest in China. So it's just one of these circular routes through layers of offshore companies and layers of secrecy so that the trail isn't obvious. People can't really work out who that money belongs to or what was its original source. And then I'll bring it back into my country as a so-called foreign investment. That's how it happens in China. And you have the same in Russia, with Cyprus being used as the place that Russian earnings are kept in, tunneled to, and then brought back from as FDI into Russia. And India has a very similar relationship with its neighbour, Mauritius.
Whoever ends up exploiting foreign direct investment for their own gain, whether it's rich residents or big companies, the fact remains that many of the havens facilitating this abuse are British Crown territories and protectorates. Back to accountant Mr. Venkatesh in India.
How likely are countries like the UK, really, and the US, which operate some of the world's largest hubs, how likely is it that they're going to cooperate to ensure that countries like India are not suffering this loss of income?
Put it bluntly, we don't expect much. That's a fact of the matter. But having said that, diplomacy is not to take no for an answer. 4 years back, this subject would not have been on the table. But the government should plug the loophole, because if we don't get this thing done, we are legitimizing implicitly tax havens, such structures. My view is capital flows to those countries which demonstrate spine. Multinationals don't partner with beggars. You don't get dictated by multinationals. It's a partnership. So if multinationals choose to come, they are welcome. If multinationals choose not to come and ignore 1/6 of humanity, God bless them. So I think a nation of India's size, India's caliber, here is at last, there is one government which has stood up to the multinational onslaught and said, so be it, on the Vodafone case, we will not budge an inch.
Now, you can argue that countries like India, China and other large emerging economies like Brazil are big enough to fight and win on this. And there are signs they're working on doing just that. But imagine the effects of fake foreign direct investment on smaller developing countries and the impact of their loss of revenue. In the Philippines, for example, the Cayman Islands was their biggest foreign direct investor in the third quarter of 2012. Really? Well, yes, but no, of course they weren't. For more information on tax havens and what can be done about them, go to www.tackletaxhavens.com. And we'll bring you more news and analysis on the TaxCast next month.